that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, and they just disagree on how.
We're going to get across that wasteland, and we're going to do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news.
Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod
and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher.
Now, here are your hosts,
Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast, as always, up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly, welcome you back to the show on a day where we are now 66 days away from the very first Grand Prix of the year at the Australian Grand Prix in Melbourne on March 15th. And I know I'm sort of beating this drum over and over again, but I'm really missing Formula One, and I'm literally counting the days, as I'm sure many of you are as well. But before then, we have winter testing to look forward to, and that's always interesting to see how the teams do and how they shake the cars down. And as of today, January 9th, we only have two confirmed dates for car launches next month, and the first one is Ferrari. They're going to launch their contender on February 11th via live stream. So Ferrari fans, look out for that. I'm sure a link will be announced soon enough. And the only other team at this point is the team formerly known as Toro Rosso, and that's AlphaTauri, which is the name of Red Bull's new clothing brand. And they are going to release their new car on February 14th on Valentine's Day. So just over a month away until the car launches, so something to look forward to in the meantime. Anyways, it has been a bit of a difficult week for me here. I had a couple of weeks off over Christmas and New Year's, the latter half of December, and really enjoyed the time off. Didn't really do a lot of anything. Well, I did. I had a bit of a staycation here at home, had a lot of fun just relaxing and taking in everything that Vancouver has to offer. But it was nice just to really kick back and relax the last couple of days of the Christmas New Year's holiday. And it was back to work on Monday, and it was difficult. The first couple of days were really, really tough to get back into. So I think I finally hit my stride. So I thought I'm going to sit down a night early, day early, and get the show out this week, midweek, rather than the usual day when I sit down and record on Thursdays. So we'll see how this goes. I can't imagine that I'll have so much energy in a couple of weeks once the daily grind really kicks in, but it's a good start to the year nonetheless. So big news this week, or the big news last week, was that of course Charles Leclerc had signed a new deal that will keep him at Ferrari until 2024. And barely a week later, Red Bull does the same thing, and they announced on Tuesday, January 7th, that they had extended Max Verstappen on a contract until 2023, coincidentally the same day as Lewis Hamilton's 35th birthday. So I think it's very, very interesting that Red Bull has really gone out and been very proactive to get Max Verstappen signed to a long-term deal with the team. And there have been some rumors that perhaps Max might be on his way to Mercedes, or that was an option. And that's something that I've thought about over the years. I mean, there was some connection a couple of years ago before he went to Red Bull, that perhaps he could go to a Mercedes in a reserve driver role or something like that. But they held fast, and they were looking for a race seat instead. And he got his opportunity when he was able to replace Danny Kvyat at Red Bull, and well, basically swapping places with Kvyat, him going to Red Bull and then Kvyat going back to Toro Rosso. However, I think that you know, it really does show that that they are serious, and they think that they've got something good going on there at Red Bull. I mean, they really have to step up and deliver now that they've signed Max to a contract. And Max says that he believes that they have the foundation of a championship potential at Red Bull. So now they've done what they needed to do to get the driver that they think they need. Now they just have to step up and deliver deliver a car, and Honda needs to step up and put a power unit in the back of the car that are going to put him in a position to win races and to win championships. And I think that in a season in 2019, when it was all Mercedes for so much of the season, that to win three races for Max Verstappen, I think was an outstanding achievement, considering that last year was, I think, very much an unknown, that, you know, just being the first year of the new Red Bull Honda partnership, that it really was, I think, a situation that we're all looking with and really keeping an eye on to see how well that would work in their first year together, because there really was, I think, a lot of question marks. And I mean, there's always a bit of a risk when you change something as important as a power unit in the back of your car, and you change from one manufacturer to another. And I mean, we all know the saga and the troubles that Red Bull, and or difficulties, I guess we should say, maybe not troubles. They might want to use that word perhaps more than me, but it certainly wasn't as smooth sailings in the V6 turbo hybrid era as it was previously, when they were winning lots of races and lots of championships together. And but you know, that being said, you could tell that relationship had really run its course. So Honda really were in the right place at the right time, but they really had, I think, a bit of a black mark on them, considering the troubles that they had with McLaren. But here they are. They are paired together. The first season went very well, and I think that they were still able to perform on a similar level that they were previously with Renault. And you know, they were always able to win a race or two every year and manage several podiums for the drivers as well. So that was achieved last year. Gasly obviously didn't deliver as much as he probably should have. But now they really have to step up. Like I say, I mean, Max is hungry. He says he wants to win a championship with Red Bull. He wants to win a championship with Honda as well. And I think that if they can really get everything together, that the potential is there. I firmly believe that. I mean, Max Verstappen has shown over the years that despite some of the shortcomings and some of the issues that that he's had, I mean, you have to remember that he was pretty young when he came into Formula One, still as a teenager. And even though his talent was never really beyond doubt, I think we did have to watch and witness him mature and grow up a little bit. And I think that the real turning point for me, at any rate, which I've mentioned several times over the past year or so, was that the real turning point for me was Max in 2018, because he got off to a bit of a rocky start, had made a couple of mistakes early in the season. And I think it really came to a head at Monaco that year when he put the car into the wall in FP3 and then was not able to get back out onto the track and qualified, and had to start from the back of the grid. I mean, he did very well to get into the top 10. I mean, he was the only guy that really made any progress through the race order on that day than anyone else did. So, I mean, that was you know, very, very impressive what he did. But more so, I think what the aftermath. I mean, all the things that were said, I think, by Helmut Marko, just saying that I think I can't remember the exact word, but I think he was basically hinting at that Max was impatient and needed to grow up a little bit. I mean, I'm kind of parsing here, kind of paraphrasing, but that was sort of the gist of what Marco was getting across. Anyhow, Max shows up a couple of weeks later at the Canadian Grand Prix in Montreal, all by himself, no entourage, no father, no Jos Verstappen in the pits, and there all weekend long. And he really came out in that first race back. He turned around, had a very good result in Montreal. And for me, I don't think he's ever really looked back. I think he's become more consistent. I think he's become more focused, and the results, they've been there. I mean, I think he's done the very best that he can do in the car and the engine that he's had. So, I mean, if this is what we can expect to see from Max Verstappen in I don't want to really throw shade at Red Bull and Renault or Honda or anybody but like that. But I mean, compared to compared to Mercedes, and they're the class of the field, and Ferrari for a good portion of time there as well. The Red Bull was almost a little bit second fiddle. I mean, Mercedes has been the benchmark for everyone else, but I mean, Ferrari's been able to claw their way back and fight on them with some level terms from time to time, obviously. not for most of the 2019 season, but 2018 was pretty even until about halfway through the year. And then after the summer break, after Spa, that challenge really started to fall apart. And Italy in 2018, when Hamilton and Vettel collided together, that's when it kind of went downhill. But anyways, Red Bull has always been a little bit of a step behind. And then this past year, they're able to turn it around. And we're better than Ferrari for a good portion of the season there. And Ferrari had a bit of a renaissance later in the year. And I know there's that whole debate and the question of the legality of the engine and all that, which, you know, depends to who you really are and which side of the conversation. I mean, Ferrari, they've been maintaining the entire time, and even again recently, that there was nothing wrong. There was nothing illegal about what they had been doing with their engine. And they felt that their cause was justified, or verified, perhaps is more accurate, by the fact that even though that the engine and was scrutinized and examined many times over the course of the year, they were never penalized for it. And I mean, that's no guarantee that they weren't cheating. Then maybe that's perhaps you know, if you're skeptical or a bit of a cynic, you say, well, then maybe they just found a good enough way to to hide it and prevent the scrutineers to really figure out what they were doing. Anyhow, this year, of course, they struggled with downforce, and where they struggled, Red Bull stepped up. And I think the first real signal that there was something special going on, or the potential of something good happening with Red Bull and Honda, was at the Austrian Grand Prix, because Mercedes just, they weren't in it for that weekend. They just didn't have the pace compared to everyone else. I mean, Charles Leclerc was leading a good portion of the race, but ultimately nobody was going to stop Max Verstappen. I mean, he just was the guy in the right car on that day. And if Honda and Red Bull can deliver him a car and reliable power and lots of it on a more regular basis, then it will be fun to watch him scrapping it out there at the top. I mean, we've seen it at times, you know, that it can get a little bit nasty between himself and Charles Leclerc. And, you know, I don't mind telling you, I'd like to see more of that. I'd like to see Max fighting with guys like Leclerc and Lewis Hamilton, Sebastian Vettel, maybe not so much if you're Sebastian Vettel, but still, Max is an exciting guy to watch, and to see him ink a deal with Red Bull for the next several years is going to be, it's going to be an interesting and fun situation to watch. Anyways, Max had to say about his extension with his contract, quote, "I am really happy to have extended my partnership with the team. Red Bull believed in me and gave me the opportunity to start in Formula One, which I have always been very grateful for. Over the years, I've grown closer and closer with the team, and besides the passion from everyone on the track performance, it is also really enjoyable to work with such a great group of people. Honda coming on board and the progress we've made over the past 12 months gives me even more motivation and the belief that we can win together. I respect the way Red Bull and Honda work together, and from all sides, everyone is doing what they can to succeed. I want to win with Red Bull, and our goal is, of course, to fight for a world championship together." So there you go. Max saying all the right things, and obviously quite pleased and happy to have extended his deal with Red Bull and Honda for the next several years until 2023. Anyways, time for a quick break. We'll be back again in just one moment. Don't go away. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the show. And sticking with Max Verstappen, Honda says that they believe that relationship with Max is very much, quote, like a young Senna. And that comes from the lips of Honda Formula One boss. And that's Masashi Yamamoto. And he told motorsport.com, quote, as Honda, we see him as a very important factor with Honda's project. He's young, but his driving is really impressive. He looks like seeing a young Senna with his relationship with Honda. Max maybe pays respect to Honda. He feels Honda is familiar. And then probably the badge he showed on the podium in Austria proved that he was very happy as well. This gives us an emotional that we want to provide a good engine for him. Of course, all the four drivers are very important to us. So again, I think it's very interesting comparing Honda and Renault and the relationship that they have with Red Bull. And of course, Renault and Red Bull had been partners together for many, many years, but it had been slowly going downhill. I mean, Christian Horner had been critical about the lack of power in their engines going back as early as 2015, perhaps even 2014. I know he was talking about it in 2015, but I might have the dates mixed up. I mean, it is, going on 5-6 years ago, but it's been a while. And as I was saying just before the break, I felt that that relationship had really run its course, and Honda was just in the right place at the right time. And of course, Red Bull had the opportunity to evaluate their engines while they were in the back of their junior team in Toro Rosso. So they were really, really good, in a good position to evaluate that. And you can tell that it just seems on all sides, there seems to be a lot of good, good synergy. You know, Max seems happy, obviously, with the team. He seems happy with Honda, and vice versa from all the other sides. And then you have the good relationship that Red Bull have with Honda. And it just seems that if they can get it right, then it could be they could make a quantum leap forward. And Max did say earlier in the week, quote, I think so. I think we're in the right direction. There's no question about that. Now it's just about how much development we can push through for next year. I more or less know. I hope it's just going to be enough. Next year, there are no real changes in the regulations anyways, so you can just build on what you have now. And with the second year working with Honda, I think that should help. We massively improved the performance of the engine. I think we know where we have to improve on. We've already improved the car. So I think Max also makes a very, very good point there that that they are just building upon what they've done for this past year, because the regs are basically frozen right now. There's no significant changes to really talk of for 2020. I mean, 2021 is going to be it's all going to be brand new, right? I mean, the cars are going to be completely different. The regulations are going to completely change. And I mean, I don't really dislike the way that the cars are now. I think the current formula that came into effect in 2017, I think it's worked all right. I mean, I don't have any real issues with it. I think that there are a little bit more opportunities for overtaking. I mean, it's not really super close wheel-to-wheel racing, but I think some of the criticism that I've seen out there, I think it really depends on the race and the track as well. I mean, the cars certainly seem suited better to some tracks more than others. I mean, Monaco always seems to draw a lot of criticism, but I think that it's just not a great track for modern Formula One cars. I think they're just too fast. They're too quick through the corners. There's too much disturbance behind the cars with the aerodynamics, and I think that's, obviously a big problem with why guys are not able to find themselves in good opportunities to pass cars around the streets of Monte Carlo. But, you know, having said that, I mean, we have seen over the years some guys are just able to get the job done. I mean, Max Verstappen did just that in 2018, made up at least 10, if not more, positions over the course of the entire race after starting at the back of the grid. However, this this year things are a little bit different compared to 2021. So I mean, we are sticking with what's going on, what's basically on the table for 2019. So there, it's just going to be an iteration and improvement upon that. So I guess we'll see. I guess it will be interesting to find out who's really focused more on the cars for this year, or really putting in a lot more effort into the getting the design and the concept right for 2021. I mean, you just have to assume that the Mercedes are going to put out a good car. I mean, until they put out a lemon on the track, I really don't have any reason to doubt them. I mean, I think you'd be a little bit mad to suggest at this point that this is the year that Mercedes aren't going to get it right. I mean, there's always that possibility, but I just can't see it happening personally. I mean, this just seems to be a group of people that that love winning races, and it seems to me every time one of their cars wins, I mean, the emotion that you see in the pits, on the pit wall, it seems genuine to me. I don't see people getting a little sort of blasé about, oh, you know, whatever, we won another race. I mean, they seem genuinely excited every time they win a race, every time they win a championship, and be it either drivers or constructors. I mean, they seem like they're genuinely excited. So we just have to assume that they're going to build a good car for this year, and then the big question becomes, who else is going to build a good car that can really challenge? I mean, you'd have to assume that Ferrari is going to be in that conversation, but again, it just really comes down to, can they get it right this year after having such a disappointing 2019? I mean, after doing so well and really signaling well in winter testing that the car was just that much better or faster than everyone else, it was completely the difference once we got to Australia, and it went from a testing situation to live racing. They were so far off of the pace. But I mean, having said that, I mean, they just had the car, I think, dialed in better than some of their competitors. I mean, Red Bull, for example, their testing was limited. I mean, they had Max there and they had Pierre Gasly. And then in one of the test sessions, Gasly racked up the car. And I think it might have been the only car that they brought that time. Or at least it put a real drain on resources and spare parts. And that affected the amount of time that Max could get out there. And then Mercedes, they've been quite candid and open that they just didn't understand the W10. As well as they thought that it really handled in real life a lot different than they were predicting and what the drivers were expecting. And Lewis has come out and said that it took a while to get that car dialed in. And once they did, I mean, you know, wow, what they achieved last year again was just remarkable. And again, it just shows how many points and how much you can achieve in Formula One when you have a good pairing of drivers like Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas. I mean, Bottas, of course, is not going to win as many races as Lewis Hamilton, but there were only a couple of races last year where he was really off the pace. I mean, he's always good for to get a podium. You're going to get bring a bunch of points home back there, and I mean, he's good for a couple of race wins every year as well. I mean, if he's doing what he needs to do. I mean, 2018 was the exception year there. I mean, that was a bit of a tough year for him. The closest he came was winning in Azerbaijan, but he ran over a piece of debris, and then he ends up that ruined his afternoon. And then later in the year, I mean, he always does well at Sochi. He just the Russian Grand Prix is just one of those tracks where it's funny. I mean, the good drivers are good everywhere, but it really is amazing that you can get a certain guy in a certain car on a certain track and it just works that well. And I mean, Valtteri Bottas is that guy that just seems to do very well around the streets of the Sochi Autodrome. But anyways, just talking about that, and Bottas, you know that he's going to be good for some wins and podiums, and they're going to get a lot of points that way as well. So anyways, I'm starting to wander a little bit. I did want to stick on the topic of Valtteri Bottas and everything that he has to do this year, because he says that he wants to make the Mercedes renewal for 2021 what he calls, quote, a no-brainer. And that's going to be kind of I don't want to say it's difficult. I mean, he has proven that he deserves to be there. And just what I was saying just now, I mean, the combination of Hamilton and Bottas works well. I mean, just the amount of points that they're able to rack up over the course of a year. I mean, won the Constructors' Championship by a mile. And I think Red Bull, they have to consider 2019 a bit of a missed opportunity because, I mean, they were good enough and they were consistent enough to be in front of Ferrari. But that was the problem with Pierre Gasly. He just was a little bit in over his head. I think that's you know, fair to say after he moved up from Toro Rosso, and he just wasn't able to deliver as much points. I mean, he just was not able to get as much out of the car. And Alex Albon, who took over and then had the last, what was it, nine races of 2019, I think he did an excellent job. And the way that he was able to bring home the points, that's what I was expecting more for Pierre Gasly. So certainly for Red Bull last year, if Gasly was able to do more in the opening half of the season up until the Hungarian Grand Prix, then I think that they had a legit shot at beating Ferrari in the Constructors' Championship and finishing second. But anyways, Bottas, he does have quite a lot, in my opinion, to do. I think just because he has been at Mercedes for the past several years, but I think their reluctance to hand him a multi-year or a long-term contract really, I think, sort of signals something to the effect that I think they've been keeping their options open, that if somebody is available on the driver's market that might be able to do more than Valtteri Bottas, then they might be willing to do that. I mean, could we see potentially George Russell, who is a Mercedes driver at Williams this past season, could we see him go up to the big team in 2021 if Lewis Hamilton stays there and they decide that maybe George is the guy to do or replace Valtteri Bottas? I guess that's an option. I mean, some other names that I've heard thrown around there as well is Danny Ricciardo. And I mean, that's an interesting one as well. I mean, he took a huge risk going from Red Bull excuse me, to Renault. But now looking at the fact that Max has signed that long-term deal until 2023, maybe that justifies in Danny Ric's own mind that he made the right call, even though that they never really came out and said publicly at any rate that Max was the number one guy. I think that everybody got the vibe that Ricardo probably more than others, that was Max's team, and no matter what he did, that he might always be a little bit, I don't want to say the odd man out or looking from the outside in, but you know, certainly when you have a guy like Max Verstappen and he has all the traits and all of the hallmarks of a Formula One champion, then that's a tough thing to do. I think Danny Ricciardo's a very good racing driver. I mean, 5 years at Red Bull, I mean, he did very well. I mean, number of podiums, several race victories, and you know, I have to admit I missed not seeing the Honey Badger up on the podium last year. Formula One needs the shoey, no matter how disgusting it may be to drink champagne and toe jam out of your own racing boots, but whatever, it seems to work for Danny Ricciardo, so that would be interesting. I mean, I've also heard Danny Ricciardo's name thrown out there, possibly with a link to Ferrari, and I mean, these are all going to get thrown out there. I mean, who really is going to be like an option to go to Ferrari? I mean, nobody's going to come in out of nowhere. I think that Mick Schumacher, he's still a little bit too young. I mean, even if he wins in Formula 2 next year, I mean, he's still a young guy. I mean, Charles Leclerc, I mean, he's done exceptionally well in his first year at Ferrari, but we all know that typically Ferrari have not given a lot of shots to youngsters, and Leclerc has been more the exception rather than the rule. And I just struggle to see Ferrari taking another big leap of faith on a young driver like Mick Schumacher, no matter how good or how much potential he has. At this point, it just seems a little bit early in my mind. I think that unless Sebastian Vettel maybe takes a big pay cut, you know, the hometown discount or whatever you want to call it, I'm leaning more to the... the scenario that takes Sebastian Vettel away from Ferrari after 2020. I just feel that it's just I think he would benefit from a change of scenery, to be quite honest. But I mean, there are some big names that are still to move around for 2021. Vettel's one of them, Hamilton's one of them, Bottas is one of them, and I think that it's going to be a little bit of musical chairs within Formula One. Like I say, I mean, there's not going to be anybody coming out from somewhere else. I mean, it's not like the NFL and you trade like players between teams and like and so forth. I mean, the guys that are in Formula One are there for a reason, and the guys that are the top of Formula One, they're definitely where they are for a reason. So, I mean, they're almost more lateral and sideways moves, if anything. But I just, like I say, I kind of struggle a little bit to think that Vettel will remain with Ferrari for, you know, for a long term, let's put it that way. I mean, maybe he signs like a 1-year deal or something like that. I could see that potentially happening, or maybe 2 years and maybe reduced salary and maybe not as a number one. But again, I guess a lot of that you know, rests on the shoulders of Sebastian Vettel and what he wants to do, what he thinks he's worth and what he thinks he can accomplish. Or maybe just like I was saying just now, maybe he thinks that he needs a bit of a change of scenery and a fresh start somewhere else. And I think I mentioned over one of the recent shows that I believe that his name was thrown out there as a possible guy to go to McLaren for 2021, and that certainly is an interesting prospect as well. But just sort of sticking with or going back to Hamilton and Bottas, you know, Hamilton says that he did feel pressure from Valtteri Bottas 2.0 at the start, and I think at the start of the 2019 season is the quote that really stands out here. And, you know, I mean, Bottas, I mean, he did have a very, very impressive opening race to start the season at Melbourne. I mean, he came out flying. I mean, even Lewis couldn't keep up to him. And Lewis, I think, is still the fastest driver in Formula One, not just over the course of one lap. I mean, when the time comes, he needs to throw it down. I mean, nobody can do it like Lewis Hamilton. I mean, they call it hammer time for a reason, right? Anyways, it was kind of interesting. I mean, Bottas came into the season after, I think, really digging deep and doing some soul searching in the winter of 2018 and the beginning of 2019. And it was kind of, I thought it was just really revealing after the race when he pulled into to the paddock, and his quote over the radio was, "To whom it may concern, bleep you." And I think that really kind of signaled that I don't know who that was really aimed at. However, I think it really showed that Bottas that came back for 2019 was one that came back with a bit of an edge and a little bit more fire in the belly, more fight, whatever you want to call it. And Lewis had to say, quote, or at least about the start of last season, quote, "Qualifying was good in Melbourne, but I lost the race. I had damage and I fell back quite far. The first couple of races are usually not perfect for me. They're still not bad, but still better than average. But then there's the outside pressures of Valtteri 2.0, and I'm thinking we're 2-2 at one stage, two wins apiece. I've got to say, stall it in my mind. I can't allow the outside factors to affect me, but being human, it's very hard not to notice those things." You know, that is interesting that he should say that, but you have to remember over the course of 21 races, or in this case, or in this year, 22 races, I think over the long run, I think that that Lewis, despite him being, I think, fairly open and quite forthcoming in saying that that he feels the pressure and things like that, I think over the course of the entire year, I just can't see anybody else really sticking with him mentally. I mean, Max Verstappen might be able to, Charles might be able to, but Bottas, I'm not so sure. I think that I just find it hard that if a push comes to shove, I just don't know if Bottas has that edge to really stand up and fight Lewis Hamilton. I mean, obviously Hamilton and Rosberg didn't really get along that well. And I mean, I know that's a massive understatement, and Rosberg was perfectly, you know, fine in standing up to Lewis. You know, sometimes it did not end well. I think about Austria, think about Spain, think about Spa, you know, there's a number of examples samples. I mean, a lot of it was a little bit foolish as well. And that all really did, come down to the situation that that the team basically had to say that if they don't clean it up, then we're going to have to get rid of one or both of those guys. And I think that's a massive statement for one of them to say when you have two very good racing drivers, one of whom is Lewis Hamilton, in your team. And I think there was, you just got to read between the lines there. And they say, if we're going to get rid of one or both of the drivers, I just know they're not going to get rid of Lewis Hamilton. I mean, come on, let's be realistic here. I think over the course of the season that Valtteri, you got to say all the right things, but I just think that when it comes down to it, that he's always, I just get the impression that he's going to defer to Lewis Hamilton. I just don't know if he can really mount a sustained challenger effort to beat Lewis Hamilton and win a world championship. Maybe he can prove me wrong. I mean, I'm not going to shut the door on that, but I have to see it with my own eyes to believe it. Let's just put it that way. Anyways, time now for another quick break. Don't go away. We'll be back after a very short message from our sponsors. Don't go away. All right, welcome back to the show, and just talking a little bit now about some other topics, just kind of looking ahead a little bit. Red Bull says that the engine legality lockdown, was enormously important to ensure that they have a level of playing field in Formula One for this year. So, there were at times in the latter part of last year, there were clarification requests from the teams, and there were a bunch of technical directives that were issued by the FIA and Formula One towards the end of last season, really explaining what they were and were not allowed to do with engine tricks. Let's just call it the gray area, kind of pushing the envelope and stretching the rules to their limit. And just going back to what we were talking about earlier in the show, there was a lot of pressure and scrutiny on Ferrari, and where were they getting all that extra power and the straight line speed that they had. And there was a lot of talk and accusations thrown out that they were exploring all these gray areas that were really exploiting those or contravening them in some respect. A lot of people had different things to say and really question it, unless you're Max Verstappen, who, bluntly just came out and said, they're cheating, which, that's Max. He calls a spade. And it was kind of interesting to watch the response from Ferrari side. Bonotto just saying that there's nothing that they're doing wrong. Vettel very much the same thing. And then saying Max is immature and stuff like that. And then Charles basically dismissing it and saying, well, he's not in our team. How would he know what we're doing? So it is kind of interesting. But I do agree, though, with Red Bull that it's going to be like, it's either going to be black or white, and the rules have to be crystal clear, because if there's too much grayness to the rules, then of course you're going to have these people that are very smart engineers and designers. They're going to be looking to bend and exploit every gray area in the rules to their advantage. So they really have to get that under control. But Christian Horner had to say, quote, the power unit aspect of the car is an incredibly complex piece of kit, and I think that the FIA don't have the expertise that the teams have developed. I think what has been clarified is a lockdown in various areas, which is focused on what's happening going forward, rather than us looking behind us. And for us, what was enormously important was to have an absolute clarity going into the 2020 season. So there you go. All right. Another thing I wanted to talk about, and I just noticed I skipped ahead in my notes a little bit, and this was something I thought was interesting, but Alfa Romeo boss Frederic Vasseur believes that Charles Leclerc's self-confidence and self-criticism are the biggest traits that make him a champion. And that's a direct quote from Vasseur. And what Charles has done in 2 years in Formula One, I think in my mind is absolutely incredible. I think he's been very, very impressive. I mean, winning a couple of races in his first year with Ferrari, a bunch of podiums, flat out beating his teammate in qualifying so many times. I mean, the list just goes on and on. But I mean, the mistakes were there. I mean, look at the crash that he had in Azerbaijan in qualifying. I mean, that wasn't, you know, that didn't make Charles look all that good. But again, I mean, he is a young guy. He's still learning. And the big thing for me is that over the course of the entire year, I think he found his feet rather well, and I think he settled down nicely. I mean, it can't be easy, regardless how good of a driver that you are. I mean, we all know that to get into Formula One in the first place, not only do you have to be a very good driver, I mean, you also have to be very good in the gray matter, you know, the between the ears, and you know, it all comes down to focus as well, and also the mental aspect and handling the pressure. And like I say, it can't be easy for anyone to go to a team like Ferrari, where the scrutiny is so intense, and the passion that the fans have is so big, and just the huge expectations that are out there for anybody that goes to drive Ferrari. So I think Charles handled it very well. And of course, his rookie season Formula One the year before in 2018 with Sauber Alfa Romeo, as it was called back then. I mean, again, I think just incredibly impressive what he did, and obviously was a very average car, and that's, I think, being you know, fairly flattering as well for the car that year. But I mean, he did. I think when you use the benchmark of what did Charles do, and how did his teammate Marcus Ericsson do? I mean, it really was a pretty clear cut situation. I mean, Charles was miles ahead of him all year long, and I mean, he was just able to get more out of that car, out of that that Sauber than his teammate, and the ways that he was able to get up as high as he could into qualifying, getting to Q3 quite a good number of times. I think he did, you know, he did cool off a little bit towards the end of the season, but he, in my mind, I think he did very, very well for Sauber Alfa Romeo last year. And obviously Ferrari, you know, they've had him in their system, in their academy for a number of years. So, I mean, it was a question, is he going to develop enough to the point where he could be a guy that can come into our team and win races? And that answer is obviously yes. But anyways, what Vasseur was saying was, quote, "I think it's one of the characteristics of Charles, but mainly of champions, to be very, very self-confident in the car, and they can sometimes be able to do things coming from the moon because they have huge self-confidence. And the self-confidence allows them, when they're out of the car, to have self-criticism, to blame themselves, because they know perfectly that they have the potential. They are a champion, and they can say, okay, I had a poor drive today. And it's only a champion who's able to say something like this. On paper, they are better than the others, but he's able to blame himself. Okay, forget the session, I had a poor drive. And it's good for the team, because when it's not the case, they could bring you in the wrong direction." So there you go. I think that's a very, very insightful quote from Frederic Vasseur into what Charles Leclerc is like, and everything that he brings to the table. And you know, obviously we've been talking about it for a long, long time here among ourselves, just how good Charles is, and very much like Max Verstappen, that given a good car and a fast and reliable car, that this guy has the characteristics to be a race winner and a world champion. So if it's going to be fun watching Max over the next several years, it's going to be equally as enjoyable to watch Charles Leclerc, especially if you know, their respective teams can give them good cars to go out and race with. Anyways, this next story I think is really cool, and that's McLaren, and they're planning to run at a budget cap level, and this is their bid that they will try to match the top teams in 2021 by running to the limit of the budget cap, which will be set to $175 million, which you know, doesn't sound like a lot for Formula One. I mean, considering how much money some of these top teams like Ferrari and Mercedes are spending, but I think it's a good idea. I like the concept that by, you know, everybody spending similar amounts of money, and say, you know, one team is spending, say, 175 million right now, but say Mercedes is spending $300 or $400 or $500 million a year. Of course, they have the resources to do so. So in principle, I think it's a good idea. But when it comes down to the things like salary caps and that we've seen in other leagues and other financial restraints, does it work? Does it help break the strangleholds that some of these dominant teams, regardless what sport it is, doesn't matter if it's football or hockey, basketball, baseball, whatever it is, or a motorsport like Formula One, they are sort of artificial measures, if you want to call them that. But we'll have to wait and see if it works or not. I guess when it comes down to it, it's not much how much money you spend, it's but how you use it. It might make some of these other teams, they might be able to come up with more ingenuity in their design and come up with something a little bit special and maybe a little bit unorthodox. But the thing is that when you have like a team like Mercedes, say spending $400 million now, and they're reducing that to $175 million, of course, they've got to be a little bit more clever in the way that they do things. But, they're still going to have all those people that were designing them and building the cars when the budget was $400 million reduced to $175 million. And then the vice on the flip side, vice versa, that a team that was maybe spending less than that before, now they got to spend a little bit more, then there's still the same people there. So then it really comes down to a question of who has the better engineers and designers. Is it, say, Racing Point or is it Mercedes? And I think that regardless of what the salary cap is in Formula One, or sorry, the budget cap, whatever you want to call it, teams like Mercedes and Ferrari, just being who they are, I think that they're always going to get their lion's share of the pick of the best people out there. Anyways, Andreas Seidel, team principal, said, quote, the target for us is clearly to run at the budget cap. There's a clear commitment that we will run at the budget cap because obviously that's the only chance to be able to fight the big ones. You need to be on a level playing field in terms of budget. So, we'll wait and see, because Seidel goes on to say, quote, you need to be realistic in what is achievable. Even if someone will give us for the next year $100 million more, you first need to be able to digest that and put a structure in place that you can actually produce more output in this short period of time. That's why I'm not actually too worried about 2020, also not too worried about the quotes I'm reading at the moment, that it will be the most expensive year ever for the top three teams. In the end, there's a limitation placed on the CFD side, on the wind tunnel side, so there's only so much you can do, and the aero will be in the future key performance differentiator. They will have a head start simply because where they are right now, because they do a better job, have better methodologies in place, and they have better processes in place, and so on. So there you go. It really, like I say, it comes down to it. It's when it comes to the budget cap world, it's really going to be how you spend that money and spend it wisely. So kind of an interesting quote there from Andreas Seidel. All right, well, sticking with McLaren, it was hinted at by Seidel just now, and they say it's, quote, no mission impossible to fight the top three teams in 2021. And like I say, I think that is a fairly lofty goal McLaren is saying, but they will have Mercedes engines again. Is something for them to look forward to. But Seidel, the team principal, is saying, quote, short term, my target is clearly that with next year's car, we can make the next step. But at the same time, we need to be realistic. For me, a very good step will be to see if we can jump somewhere in between where we are now and where these top teams are in terms of lap time, which would be a great achievement, but it's still hard work to get there because the top three teams will continue working on their cars as well. So that is very insightful from Andreas Seidel, but I think it really goes to show you that when it comes to 2021, how much these new regulations really are going to set, it's going to change the whole environment of Formula One, obviously. I mean, when things change that dramatically, so everything is new for everyone else, and it will be interesting to see how it all plays out, and if it brings the teams closer together, or if it's going to maintain the status quo, or is it going to mess things up that some other teams that have previously not done anything so spectacular, will it give them an opportunity to do something something. So it is interesting seeing or hearing from Andreas Seidel that that all the changes really kind of throw things open a little bit and gives hope and the opportunity for some of these teams that have been not as successful as Mercedes and Ferrari and Red Bull over the past several years that they will have a shot to be competitive in 2021. Of course, like we said before on this program, that we'll just have to wait and see. That's all it's going to come down to. I mean, it really depends on who gets it right and who gets it wrong. And the top three teams, they've been the top three teams for a reason. And until proven otherwise, as we saw Ferrari struggle last year, it proves that it can be possible. We have to assume that they're just going to still keep getting things right, and they'll still be the fastest and most competitive cars. And that's echoes pretty much what Gunther Steiner was saying, the team principal at Haas, who says he believes it's very naive to think that the new budget cap and regulations will change the pecking order in Formula One. And Steiner to say, quote, "It's very naive. It's not going to happen. I think it's difficult to say where what to convince Gene Haas. He needs to convince himself. That's how I see it. He understands what best. I don't think I can do a lot to convince him. He needs to convince himself that this is what he wants to do, that this is what he wants to use his marketing money to invest in. He's got a good enough understanding that if I tell him we can win in 2021, he might say he doesn't know what he's doing. So I would have to agree with him. So I don't know. But as I said, there's still much open issues here at the moment. So I don't know if you should make a decision now." So it is interesting that, Gene Haas, the owner of Haas F1, is pondering what he wants to do in whether he wants to stay in Formula One, but it would be a bit of a shame to see them go, honestly. I mean, I don't think that they've ever really taken their existence in Formula One to the next level. I mean, they've kind of made the headlines at times for the wrong reasons. Grosjean has definitely provided plenty of talking moments over the years. And then again, last year was not all that great for them. Anyways, I just want to stop there quickly for one final break. And then when we come back, we're going to start closing it down. Got a little bit more to talk about 2021 and some news from Williams and things like that. So don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment. All right. Welcome back to the show. It's time to start slowly but surely wrapping up this week's show for another week. And I'm just going to stick with the 2021 rules and regulations that we were talking about just before the last break there. And Formula One is in danger of the new cars becoming slower than Formula 2 cars in 21. And this comes from Racing Point team principal Otmar Szafnauer. And this was an interview he gave to motorsport.com. And he believes that if the cars are going to end up as much as 6 seconds a lap slower, it's not really Formula One anymore. And he said, and he believes that if you're going to slow down Formula One that much, then you're going to have to slow down Formula Two, because Formula Two will become faster than Formula One. So kind of interesting there. And I mean, it really is so much up in the air at the moment. Of course, we'll never, it's all speculation at the moment. I mean, none of us are sitting in the design offices at any one of these teams. We're not looking at the data. We're not looking at what's happening in the wind tunnels. So all we can do is sit back and patiently wait. But I mean, he does make a good point that if you slow down Formula One too much, then you risk that cars in lower formulas are going to start going faster than Formula One cars. And in my mind, Formula One is the pinnacle of motorsport globally, and I believe it's a place that for the best teams, the best cars, and the best drivers to compete and win races and to win championships. If you slow it down too much, and then, it comes to pass, like Szafnauer is predicting that Formula One it becomes slower than the lesser formula like Formula Two, in my mind, it's not really Formula One anymore. I mean, I know it's got all the glamour and the glitz and all the coverage and all the media and all that, but I think you have to excuse me, still let Formula One be Formula One. And as much as I'm a proponent and I agree with things like safety for obvious reasons, I still want to see the cars go as fast as safely possible. So I have mixed feelings about slowing down the cars too much. But sticking with the racing point now, just Safnauer talking about the potential for the cars being slowed down too much. I'm just going to talk now about his driver, one of his drivers, and that is Lance Stroll, who says, quote, a lot of details were behind the struggles he had in qualifying sessions for the early part of the 2019 season. And if you remember, I mean, Lance was regularly knocked out of Q1. He had a streak of 15 races where he could not get out of the first qualifying session. It started the U.S. Grand Prix in 2018 when he was still a Williams driver and extended far too long into this past season. So Stroll had to say about the situation, quote, a lot of details. At the beginning of the year, I struggled with my driver fit in the car, so I didn't fit very well, and that took a few races to resolve. It sounds ridiculous, but that's a real thing. On top of that, it's been about understanding the mechanical balance, the aero balance, the differential settings, torque settings to get the most out of the car. The weekends go by very quickly that once you get to qualifying, if you're not dialed in with the car, it's so competitive now in the midfield that there really is no room for error. There's just no margin to afford any mistakes with setup and driving. With experience, all that just gets tidied up, and the understanding of where to move, how to drive the car, and how to set up a car just becomes more clear. And that's what I've seen over the course of over the years. I've just narrowed it down to what I know works on my end and how I have to drive the car and how I have to set up the car and look for performance in it, end quote. And I think that's kind of an interesting revelation from Lance Stroll. My takeaway from that is that sounds like a guy that doesn't really 100% understand or know or is maybe 100% comfortable in the car, really knows how to get the information out of the car, just the way that the car is handling and performing and what he needs to do in different areas to make the improvements. And I think he's making a legitimate point that the margin for error in the midfield is so small that that anything that disadvantages you is really going to come back and haunt you. I completely agree with that statement. I mean, the midfield in the Formula One is just that tight. I mean, the battles are just that close. So, but it was just kind of interesting just to hear about him say about all the different things like the differential settings, the aerodynamics, whatever it might be. To me, that just sounded like at least in that short quote, and read as much of that into it as you want. But my takeaway from that was that doesn't seem like a guy who's 100% comfortable or knowledgeable or really knows how to apply the changes of the car to get it work best for him. So yeah, I thought it was an interesting quote from Lance. Anyways, okay, moving on. Ferrari, they believe that key team personnel should not be Formula One boss, and this is in response to the stories that have been floating around there for, well, I mean, it's picked up a little bit more speed in the past several weeks, but it's been out there for the past several months, and that's the possibility of Mercedes team principal Toto Wolff taking over the top job at Formula One, which is currently run by Chase Carey from Liberty Media, who is the F1 CEO. And I think that's kind of interesting that Ferrari should say that. But again, I think who else has, who else is qualified to do that job? I think that when it comes to somebody who has a very intimate and detailed knowledge of Formula One, like Toto Wolff, could that be applied to, say, the commercial side of it, the media side of it, the rules side of it, and everything that that comes under the scope of the CEO? That's a really good question. I mean, certainly he knows what it takes to build a competitive team. And I mean, Mercedes' success in Formula One is almost unparalleled. I believe that if they win a double championship this year at Mercedes, that the W11 would be the first car in history to help accomplish that feat. So, you know, for Ferrari to say that, I guess it really depends on your point of view. I mean, I guess if you're you know, somewhere up in the brass in an automotive company that like Ferrari or Mercedes that also has a Formula One team, then of course that's going to be, I think you're going to be a lot less receptive to that idea than, you know, if it's somebody coming from the outside or from maybe from another Formula One team. But it is, I don't know. I think it really depends on, I mean, Ferrari CEO Louis Camilleri said, quote, "I think that anyone who's really active and an important player in a certain team within the last 5 years to take on the responsibility of F1 would automatically create conflicts of interest, perceived or otherwise. So personally, I think it would not be a good thing as to who should ultimately run F1. So, you know, that is a fair comment, I think, from Camilleri. You know, that, I mean, Toto Wolff going from running Mercedes to running Formula One. I mean, I can see that the potential or the suspicion of things like that. I mean, politics is a big part of Formula One, like it or not. So, I mean, I could see a bit of suspicion there and that some teams might not be 100% happy with that. Anyways, talking about Williams now, they believe that, quote, they had to hit rock bottom before they could rise up again. And that's from Williams team principal Claire Williams. And she's just referring to the real hole they found themselves in 2019. I guess they're at the point now that, you know, there's no way to go but up from where they were last year. But she does insist that it's something that cannot happen again. I mean, the only point that they got in 2019 came of care of Robert Kubica at the German Grand Prix when he got 10th place. But that was only due to the fact that after the race, both Alfa Romeos were hit with time penalties at the end of the race. So they were able to snag one point, and that was probably, You know, I think it's fair to say that was their only shot to, you know, to get a point that year, unless there was another equally wet and bizarre race as Hockenheim. I mean, that really was a pretty unique and one-off kind of race. I mean, I know that we have wet races. I mean, you can expect to see one or two usually every year, but that was completely crazy compared to, I think, any other Grand Prix, wet or dry, that we've seen in a very, very long time. Anyways, just a couple of last things here that I thought were kind of interesting, and one of those was, you know, of course, all our thoughts and prayers are with everybody in Australia that have been victims and suffering with the horrible, you know, situation they've had with the fires down there. I mean, it's absolutely dreadful what's going on there. But Danny Ricciardo has pledged, along with a lot of other high-profile Australian athletes, to get involved by making making financial support and whatever he can do to help in that regard. And then also Fernando Alonso is currently racing in the Dakar Rally. He had a bit of a setback earlier this week when he hit a rock in the second stage of the race and was forced to stop for a couple of hours while they had to wait for a group of mechanics to come and help him and his co-driver Marcoma out. And so, I mean, there's still several thousand kilometers to go before they're all done, but still, that's you know, to lose 2 hours like that is just you know, that's a huge deficit even for a guy like Fernando Alonso to dig out of. But he did say on his Instagram account, quote, "Good day in terms of pace, third in the first splits, and in terms of navigation, that we were very comfortable. Bad day in terms of result, as we lost more than 2 hours repairing a hit in the front axle." So there you go. A little bit from Fernando Alonso, guy who does not like to sit still. And of course, makes you wonder if he might be able to find a way back into Formula One for 2021, considering some of the vacancies that might open up. And I guess the big question is, has Fernando left himself a welcome in Formula One, or did he burn too many bridges before he left? Anyways, there you have it. That's all the news in Formula One that we have for this week. Thank you so very much for listening. If you want to get in touch with me, easiest way is via email at scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com or on Twitter at scuderiapod. Sorry, at scuderiaf1pod. I'm getting my handles all big stuff here, but it's all good. And anyways, if you want to do us a solid and help us out here, the easiest and quickest way, only requires a minute or two of your time, is to go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you download and listen to podcasts from and leave a 5-star rating and review. It certainly does help us immeasurably and helps the podcast become more relevant and grow. And ultimately, that's what it's all about, is to connect with other Formula One fans all around the world. And that's part of the reason why we do the show. Anyways, again, thank you very much for listening. Enjoy the week, and I'll talk to you again very, very soon. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast.
If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com.
Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.